to order at this time. It's 20 minutes to 2. We have three people present with Senator Calgary online. And we have two other people that will be coming shortly. I think they're in another meeting. Senator Dyson and Senator Davis here. We have two bills to come before us today. We're going to take up the first bill that we have on this schedule for today is Senate Bill 267. I have an intern working in my office. It's the bill that she's going to be carrying. I'm going to ask her to come forth with Tom Obermeyer. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. Why don't you give your name for the record? And
my name is Yana Kriavsky, and I work in the office of Senator Davis. I'm here to present Senate Bill 267, an act requiring certain persons licensed by the State Medical Board to document an infant's prenatal exposure to alcohol in the infant's medical file. Senate Bill 267 mandates that healthcare professionals record an infant's prenatal alcohol exposure to alcohol if consent is given by the mother in the infant's medical file. This information is desired to assist with early FASD diagnosis when applicable. The benefits of early detection of FASD are immeasurable in comparison to late detection, misdiagnosis, or possible failure to diagnose. Early diagnosis and intervention has shown to reduce the risk of developing secondary disabilities, such as difficulty in school, trouble maintaining employment, mental health problems, drug and alcohol addiction, and more. Due to the ambiguous nature of many of the symptoms of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, misdiagnoses are common. In the cases of misdiagnosis, the benefits of early intervention are rendered ineffectual. A documentation of prenatal alcohol exposure in the child's medical file will assist medical professionals in making more accurate diagnoses. This bill limits use of information pertaining to prenatal alcohol use by the mother to purposes of diagnosis, treatment, and care. This legislation comports with the FAS Surveillance Project recommendations found in fetal alcohol syndrome prevalence in Alaska. Healthcare providers should be encouraged to document the details of maternal alcohol use during pregnancy in the child's medical chart. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Obermeyer, did you have anything to add to that? Or
no, I just would draw your attention to the brief fiscal note that indicated that it's a zero fiscal note and that the intent of the legislation was to improve and enhance the ability of service providers to identify, screen, assess, and diagnose individuals impacted by prenatal exposure to alcohol.
We do have quite a few people that want to testify on this particular bill, but do you have any questions at this point, Senator Calgary? Dyson? Yes?
Is Diane Castro going to testify?
I have quite a few people on the list. I don't know if her name is there. Is Diane in the audience? Yes? She is.
Okay.
She's on the list.
Yeah. So... this young woman has superintended Alaska going from having virtually nothing going on with fetal alcohol spectrum stuff to one of the better programs in the nation. And she may not be the most knowledgeable expert around, but there's nobody in our state that's worked harder on this issue. And so I would encourage you to let her testify fairly early in the process.
Yeah, she signed up to testify, and we'll call on her. If there's no other concerns or questions at this point, we'll start with the testimony because we have quite a few people on the list. And why don't we just invite Diane Castro up so she can start this off? You can state your name for the record and
good afternoon.
Who you're representing.
For the record, I'm Diane Castro. I am the Manager of Prevention and Early Intervention Services with the Division of Behavioral Health. And as I'd like to thank Senator Dyson for his kind words. And as he indicated, for about 7 years, I was the director or manager for the Office of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome for the state of Alaska. At that time, we were one of Well, we're probably one of the only states that actually had an office of FAS in dealing with this issue and dealing with it very directly. So I think it is true that for the state, we have done a tremendous amount of work in this area and have continued to move this work forward even after we exhausted some federal funding that we had to continue this. And the legislature has been very gracious in helping keep some general fund dollars moving forward so that we could continue doing diagnosis. What I would like to start out by saying is that the Department of Health and Social Service does support the concept of this bill. We want better a better ability for our diagnostic teams across the state to be able to document maternal drinking during pregnancy. We do recognize there are some concerns that Department of Law has, and we certainly want to recognize those and work with the committee if there are areas we can help in that, in clarifying those. So what I will say is we do support this bill. We know, and one of the things that we have dealt with over the years in looking at FASD diagnoses and the process is that we currently use a gold standard diagnostic process called the 4-digit diagnostic code. It was developed by Drs. Susan Astley and Dr. Sterling Claren out of the University of Washington. It is to look at four specific areas of concern and then rate those in order to come up with a diagnosis. Those four areas that are on the 4-digit code are the facial features, and there are very specific facial dysmorphologies for someone with the full fetal alcohol syndrome diagnosis. There is growth deficiencies, so growth and size, weight, height, all of those things are considered as the second point. The central nervous system and the damage to the brain is the third category that we look very closely at to make determinations about a diagnosis. And then the fourth one is known maternal alcohol use. That is the one that is the most difficult for our diagnostic teams to readily have available to be able to know if mom did. Oftentimes there are suggestions there as well, I know that mom did drink, or I saw her, or an aunt reported that, or mom is currently in treatment, so she must have been drinking during pregnancy. But too often there isn't any real documentation to this effect. Currently, the diagnostic teams can only have access to the child's medical records. They cannot have access to the mother's medical records, which is as it should be. But with that said, we need a way to be able to document if the medical provider knows that mom did consume alcohol during pregnancy, to be able to document that in the child's records. Now, as I say that, I think there's another concern I have, and this is again from my years of working in this field, is that the one thing we don't want to do is to set up a system whereby women feel like we are targeting them and that this is going to be used to punish them for drinking during pregnancy. There are many reasons women drink during pregnancy. The one reason they don't do it is to damage their child. That we know that. They don't deliberately drink. But if they are someone with an addiction, with other issues going on, oftentimes alcohol is the drug of choice. And so we don't want this to be a way to punish the mothers. We want this to be a way to get appropriate services to the children. So with that, you know, there are a couple of things that in our original bill analysis that we talked about that might be useful to improve the bill. One would be that one concern is that moms need to give their consent. And again, as someone who's very cognizant of civil rights, I understand of someone's rights that they should be able to give their permission to have this noted. But in this case, if we have that clause in there, my concern is that many women will not, for fear that there will be retribution down the road. So that would be one concern. One way that I think we could assist in that is on line 13 of the bill, where it says, the information received under this section may not be used except for the purpose of providing medical diagnosis, treatment, or care, would be of the child. because at this point, it doesn't say that it's just for the child. It says that it would be used for those purposes. So if we could narrow that, that the information would be used for the purposes of helping with the diagnosis, either an early diagnosis of a child or even later on in their lives when as they're grown and perhaps they're no longer with their mother, they might be in a foster care situation, they could be an adopted home, that they may have lost the mother's records anyway. So I think if we clarify that that's just for working with the child, that would be a good thing. And then, another thing that jumped my attention here is that in the last line where we said that an infant means a child who is less than 12 months of age, one of the things that we do have in the state of Alaska through the Birth Defects Registry is that it is required that if a doctor or medical provider knows that a child has been prenatally exposed to alcohol, they must report it to the Birth Defects Registry. But that's not a registry where it can then help the child get a diagnosis, because that's a confidential registry. But unlike all other birth defects, the Birth Defects Registry for children who are prenatally exposed to alcohol lets people report up to the age of 6, because oftentimes that information is not discovered right at in those early years. And so just I don't even know legally how that would look, but it just came to mind that might be something to look at as well, that it could be noted at a later date if that came forward after the child turned a year old. But overall, we support the concept of this. One thing that I was actually looking at some data just before I came over here, because we keep data of all the diagnoses that occur in the state, and what we're looking at now across the board is that at least 20% of the time, our diagnostic teams cannot document that that maternal drinking during pregnancy. They suspect it, but they do not have any way to document that, which oftentimes will lead to a lesser diagnosis or a diagnosis that does not get the child the services that they might need. I think I will stop with that. I would be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you very much. Senator Dyson?
I think I have three questions quickly. Maybe the last time you and I talked about this at some length, Alaska led the nation in prenatal alcohol poisoning of children by a factor of 3 or 5 or something, partly just because we're doing a better job of diagnosing stuff. But can you tell the committee kind of where you sense we're at in problem?
Through the chair. Senator Dyson, you're absolutely right. We have led the nation, as we do in too many social problems, prenatal exposure to alcohol is very high in the state of Alaska. As you point out, one of the reasons that we do believe our rate is higher is that the state of Alaska in general and the Alaska Native Health Corporation specifically have done an excellent job of tracking this disability. They do a lot of the Native medical centers do pre-screening of all women who are pregnant, and so they've done a much better job of catching this and knowing it. So our data is better than most states. I think one other reason that we are highest, or that we say we're highest, is that many states are not keeping this data. So of the states that keep data, we continue to be right up in the top. Although I will tell you that our data is starting to see a small downward trend, and that would make sense with all the work that we have done. So we are hopeful, and again, it's not significant enough yet to celebrate, but it's certainly a beginning step.
All right. Secondly, correct me if I'm wrong, there is no way of diagnosing fetal alcohol effects, that's the affected children who do not have the facial features and so on, except if we can document that the mother was drinking during the pregnancy. True?
Through the chair. Mostly true. There is in our diagnostic process that you can have, for instance, static encephalopathy, which means your brain, there's been damage to the brain that will not get better, without prenatal without, I'm trying to think about exactly how it's worded, but without knowledge of prenatal exposure. Now, what that does is it still documents the disability, but it might not document the cause of that disability. So we can still get a diagnosis that would point to getting some services for that child.
From a brain scan of some kind?
Well, it's more through the, brain scans are coming. They are something that they're currently working on, MRIs, and
right.
They're starting to get those to a point where eventually those will be able to be used. But right now it's mostly through testing, through psychological testing, speech and language, physical therapy, all those things where they can determine that there is a deficiency in the cognitive behavior.
I misspoke in the question. I'm talking about for infants.
For infants.
Because most of us don't start getting onto this till the kid's in school.
Right. That is correct.
Third question. If could you get together with legal and get some wording for us to be able to amend this, the part about permission? And
Senator Dawson, we are going to get to that point because we've already heard from them.
Mm-hmm.
We also know what we can do to make the fix.
Okay.
So we won't discuss that at this time with her testimony.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
I got one more. Just my understanding, maybe it's the woman that you mentioned, but this got noticed first and documented at the University of Washington Hospital when a doctor there was seeing all these children with a similar facial features, and she thought at first there's some really friendly guy in Alaska. But then started back on it, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for your testimony. Very good testimony. Yes, Senator Elton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I want to apologize for coming in late.
Before you speak, then, I guess I should recognize that you are here. I said you were coming. Senator Dice, Senator Elton and Senator Thomas is now joining us.
We were in a previous meeting, and I'm surprised that the chair was that polite about it. I mean, we don't like to do that to the chair. I'm going to begin this question by saying I'm not a lawyer, I've never been an insurance agent, and I'm not a health professional. So with that disclaimer, on line 13 on the bill,
mm-hmm.
Information received under this section may not be used except for the purposes of providing medical diagnosis, treatment, or care. Given that, especially under the treatment or care, I mean, is this kind of information under those two items, would it be available to an insurance agent or an insurance company who may not want to pay for the care or for the treatment?
Through the chair, I also, not being an attorney, I don't think I can respond to that, but certainly an issue that I had not thought about, but
maybe it's one that that we could follow up with the Department of Law on.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you for your testimony. Oh, so Senator Thomas, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. There was concern expressed at one time that if you needed the mother's permission to gather this information, that you might not necessarily get that because somebody is admitting to doing harm to their child. I don't know how realistic that is, but I can see that as a problem. And I guess what we're trying to do here is early detection. So the sooner somebody makes mention of it, I guess just the implication by a doctor asking the questions would cause some to say, "Oh, absolutely not." Some it might be very apparent that is and was the case. I guess I'm not even sure if it's a question. I'm just grappling with that myself, whether it's actually going to help, or like the expression of concern before was that you're just going to drive it down. And even though some doctor might be a specialist in this area and recognize symptoms and know that's the case, not be able to document it in the record when they know it, even without the mother admitting it, and or obviously the mother then not giving permission for it to be documented.
Through the chair, even though it isn't totally a question, I do have a response, because this is a critical issue, and it has been an issue that has confronted those of us working in this field for some time, and that is that drinking during pregnancy is and causing a disability for your child is the one disability that is truly a personal, you know, you have caused this, which makes it a very different form of disability in that there's a lot of guilt. You know, even if mom was told that it was okay to drink occasionally during pregnancy, you know, and that is still being told by many of our doctors, there is a tremendous amount of guilt. There is also the issue that for many women who are have alcoholism, who are addicted to alcohol, cannot stop. They want to stop, they can't. But this whole issue of guilt and I caused this, and you know, and then the other issue of putting blame on the mom, and should we punish mom? So those are issues that have surrounded the work that we do for a long time. And I think that by talking about documenting this in the child's records is can help, but I think there it's so tightly linked to the role of the mom, and it's documenting that mom did indeed cause this disability. So somehow we need to get away from the blame of mom. I mean, we need to work with those mothers. We need to get them the services. We know that in the state of Alaska, there are not enough treatment programs and treatment beds for those women who want treatment, let alone, you know, trying to push women who perhaps are not ready for treatment into those beds. So we need to figure out how we can do a better job of helping moms actually before they get pregnant to know that they should not drink during pregnancy, which we did a lot of work over the last 10 years to really change our public norm about that. And then we need to make sure we have treatment and services available for those women who do get pregnant and are still drinking. And then we need to make sure we have appropriate services in place for those children who unfortunately are the victims of that drinking during pregnancy. So I think what this bill can do is to help with that little sliver of those children that are out there, and even adults. I mean, again, we're not getting all the kids diagnosed when they are children, unfortunately. We are still seeing a lot of teenagers, particularly teenagers and young adults, who are coming in for diagnoses because we miss them in those early stages. So if this can, if we can have some way to better document that mom did drink during pregnancy, it will hopefully lead to an earlier identification, earlier screening, and earlier diagnosis so that those children can get the services they need early, and as the young woman, your aide, spoke earlier, to eliminate those secondary disabilities, because that's the one thing we know. Dr. Ann Streisguth, who's from the University of Washington, and it was the study that Senator Dyson was referring to, who saw the common faces, she did a kind of a landmark study back in the mid-90s and found that one of the protective factors for young children in order to be more successful as they grew up was to get an early diagnosis. So that is one of our goals. It's the earlier we can have a diagnosis, the better outcome these young people will have. We cannot change the fact that they have brain damage. That damage is there. But what we can do is to get them services, get them accommodations, and help derive and lead them into it a way that they can be successful in life, which they can be very successful.
You may continue.
Just one thing then on the prevention end of it. This is completely preventable is what it amounts to. It, obviously, it requires 100% participation. So I know you've been feel you've been fairly successful, but are there things that should be done that aren't being done as far as, you know, making sure? Obviously there are, or else it would, you know, we wouldn't be talking about it here today, I guess, at least this part of it. So I guess I'd like to know what you thought, maybe not necessarily today, but what funds, what resources should be used in what manner to cut down on this very expensive and extremely unfortunate situation for the kids that are born that way. So,
and again, I know that's not a question, but through the chair, I'd just like to respond that there are a number of things, and I think that one thing that ties directly to this bill is one of the things we did during our time when we had the Office of FAS is that we did a knowledge, attitude, beliefs, and behavior survey. We did it in 2006, I believe, was the first one. Then we did it again about 5 years later. And we wanted to test and see what people thought and knew about this disability. And unfortunately, the one category that had the worst response rate for, is it okay for a woman to drink alcohol occasionally during pregnancy, the category of people who said most often yes were our OBGYNs for the state of Alaska. Now, what do our OBGYNs do and who do they see? Women of childbearing years primarily, and women who are looking to have children. So right there is one thing we know we need to be doing a better job of, making sure that we are getting the word out to women that it's not okay to drink during pregnancy, that it's a zero tolerance. You know, I'm not someone who says we shouldn't have alcohol at all, but we shouldn't have alcohol for teenagers, we shouldn't have alcohol when we're drinking, and we should not have alcohol during pregnancy. Those are three kind of bottom lines for me. And in this state, and in most states, we still do not have a bottom line on the concept of drinking during pregnancy, and that's something we need.
And then just one short thing, if I might, Madam Chairman. If that's the case, then do we do anything for the curriculum that is at the University of Alaska for the healthcare professionals that we are educating and at this point in time, emphasizing this so that at least the new crop feels differently?
Through the chair, absolutely. That was one of our areas we were working on a couple of years ago and continue.
Thank you.
If I may.
All right. One more question.
No,
of her.
No, Senator Thomas.
Yes.
One of the things that got done before I got here, maybe Senator Elton had a part in it, was to make every bar put a label on the wall and on the table. There's been another suggestion that we have require the package stores, you know, to put it on their bag along with their logo, you know, and so on. That's one more step, and it's something Diane and I have talked about for years.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you for your testimony. Very good testimony. We have quite a few people signed up. If you have other information to bring forward, we want to hear it. If you're supportive of the bill, try to make your statement very brief so that we can move on and get to some of the parts that there are some concerns about this bill. At this time, I'm going to call up Linda Metcalf. Peggy Metcalf, I'm sorry.
I'm Peggy Metcalf, and I'm here as a mother and as a grandmother, and I certainly support this bill. We always say the children are our future, and unless we can raise every child to the best of his ability, which often, if their fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is their disability, we need to start early. And every piece of information that we have to realize that will help us raise him to be, or her to be, their very best. I do support this.
Thank you very much. There's a question, please. Just a minute.
Not a question.
Not a question.
And Peggy, you don't need to be seated at the table. I just want to note for the committee that Peggy and her husband and I were in prison together.
Yes, we were.
And I probably should follow up during a special program Saturday, and so we were able to leave when we were done. But thank you
for one of the lucky ones.
Thank you for your help on Saturday.
Thank you.
Would KJB the husband?
Yes.
Okay, he's coming forward. Would you give your name for the record also?
Yes. Thank you, KJ Metcalf, speaking for myself, and I want to thank the Senate for moving this bill forward. I know Senator Dyson and Elton have worked on this issue for a long, long time. And I won't go to the particulars of the bill, but I just want to put a kind of a personal approach to this. My wife and I lived in Angoon for 18 years. And while this is not FASD, is cuts across all ethnic and social and economic lines, but it is just devastating to a small community that has very few, if any, services. And so I have watched mothers in Angoon and elsewhere drink during pregnancy, and in turn their kids, as they grew up, drink during pregnancy. And the question was asked, what do we do to stop creating new FASD victims? And one of the best things in my experience is to provide services for those young ladies that are of childbearing age and help them through that period without drinking so that their children are healthy. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Okay, Rick, I can't pronounce your last name. So you could do that for the record.
Thank you, Senator Davis.
Yes.
My name is Rick Iannolino. I coordinate the Juneau FASD Diagnostic Clinic for Central Council of the Tlingit Indian Tribes Tribal Family Youth Services. And we've been in existence for a little over 3 years now. We've seen probably over 120 people, somewhere around 120 individuals and their families. This is a very personal thing to me because I deal with all those families. I've had many, many people who didn't get into the clinic because we could not confirm prenatal alcohol exposure. I've had grandmothers crying because they didn't know what their own children had been. They couldn't confirm it. They weren't there when they're, but they know from all the stories they've heard that she probably drank, but they don't know. We've had caregivers like aunties and uncles saying, we don't know, really, we weren't there. We've had husbands say, I don't know. The fathers of these children, I really don't know. And we cannot, and there's specific reasons why we cannot diagnose these children. We can't, they're not eligible if they don't have prenatal alcohol exposure. There's one of the primary reasons is that doctors can be sued for diagnosing somebody as having fetal alcohol exposure if you don't have confirmation. The mother can come back and say, I didn't drink, this is malpractice, you didn't, this is incorrect. So basically, we've been given, our team has been real clear on, we have to protect the team as well as the children, and we all feel terrible when we can't assist a grandparent, an auntie, a parent, an adopted parent, a foster parent. We work with, sometimes mom has been a chronic problem with alcoholism and has died, and nobody will ever know. Sometimes when children have been removed and they're really having problems, if they're removed, mom doesn't want to cooperate. She's very angry, understandably, and she will not say anything. So I see this as a very compassionate bill, to be real blunt. If we could get at the front end confirmation later on, when a kid's really having a lot of problems, we don't need to go back to the mother and say, did you drink? Because she's feeling so guilty at that time. She sees the damage. At birth, she may not know what this is about. But later when we have it, and for me, the big thing about this is if we can get early confirmation, we can get early intervention. And what I mean by that is we see children at 2 years old, but they need to be seen before that. That's our earliest. And we see all the way through grandparents. We've had the oldest person in Alaska diagnosed here in Juneau, by the way. He's a grandparent. We used to bring his kids to the orientation sessions, he and his wife. We send them to infant learning, like to REACH, and there's infant learning throughout the state. But we need to get them assessed and have, we've had two-year-olds who came through the clinic, and within 3 months of going through the clinic with the recommendations and the support recommended, kids who had not spoken a word in 2 years, not a word. They didn't know if a child could speak. And we sent them to infant learning, speech and language pathologists on the team had assessed them. They were speaking. And to see a parent grateful that my kid is actually talking. But that's early diagnosis, early intervention like we're talking about. It's been very tearful for a lot of people, and they have never had their children diagnosed. They cannot get their children diagnosed.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Hearing no questions, we'll call Gladys Eve Rickley. Gladys?
I go by Eve now.
Okay.
Eve. I'm Eve Rickley.
Okay.
Of Juneau. And I was serving on the Council of Northern Light Church along with KJ Metcalf during the past year, and he didn't mention that he put together a very significant conference on FASD, and the Council of Northern Light Church did endorse that program. And I think the more the public is educated, that brought together several hundred professionals and people who are aware of that FASD. And I think the more that people are educated and become aware of the long-term effects of drinking during pregnancy, the better off we'll all be. Because I just wanted to say that I strongly endorse this kind of legislation. And I have a letter that was dropped by Joy Lyon. I won't go into reading it now.
Okay, so.
And she's from Northern Light as well.
So she's not in audience.
Very supportive. This is addressed to both you, okay. Senator Davis, and Representative Dahl.
We'll see that they get a copy of the letter then if you want to leave it. So Joy is the next name I have on here. She's not in the audience. We'll go to Jan Ruthadale?
Ruthadale.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members yes. of the committee, I'm Jan Ruthadale. I'm from the Department of Law. And I work in the Civil Division in the Child Protection Section. I'm going on 20 years and doing exclusively child in need of aid work and a little bit of juvenile delinquency work. So I'm very much aware of the devastating effects of FASD because unfortunately a lot of the children in state custody are suffering from that. And significantly a lot of their parents are suffering from that. And so I have personal, you know, through my work experience with the importance of getting the FASD diagnosis, not only for children but also for parents, so we know how to work with them. And hopefully getting to the point where they can resume caring for their children. So I have no question that this is an important idea, that and it's an important to do whatever we can to get that necessary documentation for the so that the child can be diagnosed properly. But I do have some concerns about this bill. I guess my main concern is I think everybody so far is unanimous that everybody supports the concept of this documentation, but I think this bill could actually hamper the documentation because right in the bill it says that the mother has the power to veto this documentation. And I guess my feeling is if it's important enough, which it is, to go into the child's record, and if the doctor feels it's important enough, the mother shouldn't have the right of vetoing this important documentation. I agree with Ms. Castro's remarks that that a mother might feel very guilty about what she did to her child from drinking, but drinking is not illegal, so she doesn't have any liability from that perspective. That's my primary concern is actually I think this bill might have the opposite effect of what everybody wants because it could very well lead to less documentation. I'd also like to point out that 2 years ago there was a new reporting statute, AS 4717024, that requires a practitioner of the healing arts, so obviously doctor, nurse, whoever, to make a report if the practitioner determines that the infant has been adversely affected by alcohol. And of course, an infant would be affected prenatally to that. And so I just point out that it just seems logical in my mind, at least, that if the doctor knows he's required to make this report, when he's dealing with a mother or a child infant under the age of 12, that he or she would note that in the record. So even if the even if the doctor before 2 years ago didn't think it was important to make this notation, if he now realizes, or he or she has to make this this report of harm, that the doctor's likely to make that notation in the record. If only I made a report of harm to OCS because the mother, I determined that it was adversely effective, or have a copy of the report of harm in the doctor's, in the infant's file. This bill, I'm concerned, might hamper that reporting statute because it might create the false impression to the doctor that that the doctor doesn't have to comply with this reporting statute if the mother says don't document this at all. Also, a doctor, if the doctor is very busy, doesn't note it in the file, and then because of that forgets to make the report of harm, you know, that's another concern. Also, if the mother says don't document it in the file, then the doctor, I would assume for malpractice or liability concerns, he would want to make some record of reporting to OCS, so he'd have to set up a separate filing system, separate from the child's filing system. And another concern is, and I'm sort of passing on these concerns from the person, the attorney general who does, assistant attorney general who does licensing, and that is that that 0864 establishes licensure requirements for doctors in Alaska. It doesn't set out requirements for how specific medical conditions are diagnosed or recorded. And she notes that the medical board has adopted a regulation regarding general record keeping and has adopted ethical standards for doctors. But telling a doctor how to document a specific potential medical issue is a departure from the purpose of AS 0864. And so if it is important that this bill go forward and requiring doctors to make some notation in the file, she suggests that maybe it should be in Title 18 that deals with DHSS matters. She notes that that's where requirements about abortions are regulated, and that's the only other time that we're aware of that we've actually specifically told doctors what to do in their practice. So that might be a possibility. I do agree with Ms. Casto's suggestions to clarify in the bill that this is regarding the child, the treatment and diagnosis of the child, and that it maybe somehow drafting something that it could be, this notation could be made at a later date. I mean, if the child's three and the doctor finds out that the child's been exposed to alcohol during pregnancy, then it could be noted at a later date. I would recommend, because of my statements, to remove lines 9 and 10 in the bill where it says, if the mother provides a consent to the inclusion of the information in the infant's file, just remove that whole last clause of the sentence. Another thing is, rather than to legislate it, another possibility, as Representative Thomas mentioned, is maybe having some educational component, maybe a regulation that or something through a curriculum to make sure the doctors are getting this. Also, I wonder if there's been that survey that Ms. Casto commented on was done 12 years ago. I guess I'm wondering, is there actually a current problem of documentation? There's no question a historical document, a question of documentation. Certainly the parents the mothers that are coming in, we've removed the child from the mother's care and we want her to get diagnosed through the FASD clinic. We're talking about 20 or 30 years ago that there may or may not be a documentation in the doctor's records, and those records probably don't even exist anymore. 30 years from now, hopefully in that kind of situation, because the doctor's mandated to report under AS 4717, 30 years ago, there will be a record because OCS does keep their records. And so if a child is in the OCS system, we can access the computer on the parents. And so that documentation hopefully would show up with respect to the mother of the child if that doctor was doing the doctor's job. The other thing that I just note is oftentimes when a mother is asked, is it possible that your child could have been exposed to alcohol, a mother 9 times out of 10 say, I did not drink the moment I found out I was pregnant. But the mother might not have found out she was pregnant until 3 or 4 months down the line, and by then the damage has already been done. So I think the doctors also would need to know how to ask the question, how to get the information. Those are my comments.
All right, thank you for your comments, and I see Senator Elton has his hand. What question?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Jan. I provided a disclaimer that I'm not a lawyer, insurance agent, or a health professional. I know you're at least one of the three. But my concern is, again, back to line 13, my concern is the way that's written. I mean, I don't want, especially the treatment or care. I mean, I don't want this to become a rationale for an insurance company to deny coverage at some point in the future. And I'm somewhat concerned when it says treatment or care, that may give an insurance company a rationale to have access to the report. Is that concern just misfounded?
Well, I like I said, my specialty has been in the child need of aid world. So I don't have a clue as to insurance, and I would be going out on a limb to guess that. But it's something I could get back to you.
Okay.
Sorry, through the chair. But also, I was just thinking, you know, oftentimes we're not going to cover you if it's a pre-existing injury. Well, we all know that exposure to alcohol is always going to be a pre-existing injury. But I see what you're also saying is there a way to have this might get access to the records? I guess I don't see how it could, but I can get back to you on that.
And then one more question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Back to the point that you made, and it's point number 4, the bill may create confusion for doctors who are reporting to OCS and the statutory provision. One of the concerns that I have, I understand the point that there's kind of a dual reporting process that's being accomplished here, but one of the concerns that I have, Diane had testified that OBGYNs are often not giving the right information to pregnant women. And so given that, I'm not so sure that I don't mind having a provision under the licensing law that might be a reminder that this is a duty, and if, in fact, there is a problem, I mean, it seems to me that knowing that it could implicate the license may have a slightly different purpose than a report to OCS. And if you could just comment on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator, I see through the chair. I guess a couple things come to mind. One is if you're truly concerned that a doctor is advising their pregnant women that it's okay to have a couple glasses of wine each night or whatever, I don't think this bill is going to accomplish that educational piece to let the doctor know that they have a duty not to say that to a mother. So that would be my one point, is you're not, if that's really what you're trying to accomplish, this bill is not going to do it. It just seems like it could be addressed in different ways through training. And the other is, before passing such a bill, that has exactly what you're talking about, I guess I would want to make sure that that's still what's happening out there you know, 12 years ago, apparently it was. I don't know today.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. At times in my wasted youth, I was a reluctant student. And what got my attention is when a teacher said, you may not go to the next grade, you might get an F in this, it got my attention. And I would suspect the same kind of thing. I mean, it may be an easier educational moment for a doctor to know that, in fact, unless you give good advice, you may not be able to have a license. It gets your attention.
No question.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your testimony. There's a question of Dr. Senator.
Elton.
No, it doesn't bother me at all.
You call him Dyson, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was not offended.
Nor I. Jan, did you mean to imply that mandatory recording by the reporting by the caregiver that's already in existing law covers much of what we're trying to accomplish here and may be more efficacious because it doesn't have the disclaimer about having to get the pregnant woman's permission?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, that is correct. Like I say, I think this bill might do more harm than it's intending to do than to accomplish the purpose. And the reporting statute doesn't have any caveat like that. But I do recognize that that the reporting statutes means that the report goes into a central registry, which is confidential. So, I mean, ideally, you would want this to appear in many areas. Like I could be wrong about this, but I think police reports will have a documentation. I mean, you can, but again, police reports are confidential. OCS reports and registries are confidential. Doctors' reports are confidential. But so, I mean, ideally, it would appear in all these places so that later on you could get some documentation. But this bill, I think, would end up having less documentation because the mother can refuse to have that documented as it's now written.
I understood the answer to my question to be yes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. But then did you go on to imply that we need to do something more to facilitate this information from whatever source showing up in the relevant files where it should be? So that the goal of this bill, which is early care and intervention for the child, would happen? Do we need to do something more to make that happen?
Through the chair, I don't I don't know what else you could do, and I didn't mean to imply that. Because, okay. For example,
I understand. No,
okay. All right.
Thank
I'll
you.
Leave it at that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Thomas.
If I might, just to help clarify, thank you, Madam Chairman. In existing statute, maybe it's Title 18, are doctors required, or is it required that doctors have permission to record or document other forms of abuse? And maybe I shouldn't say other forms of abuse because that might imply something. Child abuse or suspected child abuse when they treat a victim, they have to get the mother's permission or no at that point in time.
Through the chair, if you're talking about the reporting statutes, like when are they mandated to report?
Yes, it's,
they never have to get the mother's permission. This would be definitely
a departure from that. Okay, and just one short question as well, the concept of somebody suing based on the idea that they found that the doctor had recorded or documented without their permission. What would you think would be the outcome of something like that if in fact it was accurate, if the doctor had been careful in their diagnosis?
Through the chair, I don't think they would get very far in such a suit. I mean, they're a doctor, you know, good good medical practice is documenting things in the chart. And I know from my practice, it'll often be that I'll see report, you know, the doctor will say that the child said to me I was sexually abused by X, you know. Whether that's true or not, that's, he's recording important information in the chart. I've never heard of any lawsuits, but there, I think there's a doctor in the maybe we can hear from a doctor who actually faces that, but I don't know the answer.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience to testify on this bill? Would you come forward and state your name for the record?
I'm George Brown, a medical doctor who specializes in treating children. I live at 1640 2nd Street in Douglas. And I'm glad I have been able to hear all of this because it really is important and it really is complicated. First of all, I would like to draw an analogy between this and other major public health problems. We have laws that require children be immunized and have testing for tuberculosis because there are epidemics of measles and tuberculosis, et cetera. We have laws that require reporting of certain diseases, sexually transmitted illnesses, et cetera. Where this becomes very difficult, and I really appreciate, you know, the earlier remarks by the committee and by from the experience here, down to are we doing this to catch somebody and to blame them? Are we doing it because we recognize there is an epidemic and that we have a responsibility as citizens and as elected legislators to try to stem the epidemic? And that's where I would like to focus. But the beauty of this is that it also allows the possibility of cooperation between clinical medicine and public health. And I'm pretty sure, listening to the earlier discussions, that if you did another survey, that the OBGYNs in this state would probably be they'd score much higher than they did before. I unfortunately cannot tell you what my colleagues in the Academy of Pediatrics have said about this bill, or the Alaska State Medical Association. Perhaps they should be asked to comment on it. But based on all the education that's been going on for so long regarding this, I'm pretty certain that most physicians would want to do whatever is going to do better case finding and allow early identification and early intervention, because that's how we deal with the epidemic. As far as AS18 and the requirement that we report harm, most of the time we're not going to do this with this particular problem unless it's pretty obvious a lot of other things are going on too, and that would be way after more damage has been done. As far as your question through the chair, Senator Elton, about insurance companies knowing this, if we, in our records, put down the possibility there is fetal alcohol syndrome and there is an ICD-9 code, we put those codes down, and that's how we get paid, the insurance company is going to know this. But I would argue that the money that we're paying as a society for all the violence, all the horrible difficulties that fetal alcohol syndrome and effect cause, that's a minor consideration. And the insurance companies may eventually come around and say it's to their advantage to find this earlier and to applaud the fact that we are setting up a means in this state to help early identification and early treatment. I think to extend, well, definitely to add in the section B, the purpose of this is for the child, is very, very worthwhile. And I think those are all the comments I can make now.
Very good comments, and I thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Yes, Senator Elton.
Madam Chair, and
And Doctor, I'm not sure I understood, but did I hear you say that the required reporting now that the Department of Law had testified to, that the required reporting now may not be applicable because the harm has already occurred, so that a doctor may not report to OCS a problem with the mother drinking while pregnant because the harm has already occurred. There is not an instance of harm for the doctor to report if there is an FAS child.
The requirement there has to do with the doctor having evidence that there really is abuse. And in situations in which many of these children grow up, there will be abuse and neglect and many other factors which would prompt the doctor to make a report. But that's going to go on for a period of time long after the opportunity for some early intervention is passed. And I don't think it's going to pick up the one. It doesn't accomplish the early case finding that promotes the early delivery of services, the early intervention, and the significant cost savings that go with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks,
Doctor. Thank you very much. Thanks for your answer. Was there anybody else in the audience to testify? If not, I want to know if we still have the drafter online. Were they supposed to be online?
Can you hear me, Dr. Day?
Yes, I do hear you now.
Yes, this is August Willard, and I am online.
Were you here for all the testimony and the bill?
I was, Doctor.
Okay, would you have, I see there are some things on the bill that probably could be changed because the original sponsor of this bill said that it wouldn't hurt to remove something in 13. Would you speak to that?
If I might speak to several items.
Yes, I'd like for you to.
The drafting of the bill.
Yes.
Right now, in Title 47, 4717024, a practitioner of the healing art, which includes doctors and so forth, is required to report to the Department of Health and Social Services I'll just read it because it's the best. A practitioner of the healing arts involved in the delivery or care of an infant who the practitioner determines has been adversely affected by or is withdrawing from exposure to a controlled substance or alcohol to immediately notify the nearest office of the department of the infant's condition. So there is a mandatory reporting requirement already in statute. The reason why in this particular bill mother must provide her consent is because of privilege. When the mother shares information with a doctor or other medical personnel, there is the expectation that that information is privileged. If it's being placed in the child's file or the infant's file, that privilege is challenged. And, that information is being recorded somewhere else than her own confidential information. Are there specific questions as to the drafting of the bill that you would like addressed?
If we remove the statement out of the bill that we have in front of us on line 13 where it says that, line 10, I'm sorry, the documentation must be in the, no, that's not for this. Just a minute.
If the mother provides her consent.
If the mother provides her consent, could we remove that and still be able to move forward with this bill to get what we are thinking we want to get?
It's my legal opinion that you may run into to constitutional issues in terms of the confidentiality of the information about the mother's behavior that she's providing to the medical personnel. If it's going to be recorded somewhere else other than her own file, then she needs to provide her consent.
Okay, so you're saying that statement needs to stay there?
That is my opinion.
That's what I mean, your opinion?
Yes.
There is another question from Senator Elton pertaining to that.
Yeah, a follow-up question to the chair's question. I mean, how is And there may be an obvious answer to this, but if a mother takes a child to a doctor and the child has a broken arm, and the broken arm could have come from the mother or the father or a boyfriend, that's confidential information too that I would think would need to be added to the child's file and certainly would need to be reported to OCS. So I guess I'm not sure why it's a constitutional issue in the case of drinking alcohol while pregnant, but not in the case of a child who is brought to a doctor or a healing arts practitioner with a broken arm that may have come from abuse.
Senator Elton, through the chair, without going to the specific statute, if a child arrives at a clinic with a broken arm and the relevant medical personnel believes that there's been abuse, it's clear that they are required to report. Here, there's no real consensus about how much alcohol leads to adverse effects for a child. So if the mother provides some information about her consumption of alcohol during pregnancy, whether the machinery of the state should go into gear in terms of mandatory reporting is a much different situation. Without speaking to the policy rationales that may underline this bill, that the mother here would be able to provide information without threat of any sanction, so that information is there later on for the infant if later on fetal alcohol syndrome is suspected, then they have something to go back to in the child's record to confirm or deny their diagnosis.
Madam Chair, just a comment. That makes it sound as if the issue of harm from fetal alcohol syndrome is an unsettled matter of science, and it doesn't seem to me anymore as if it's that unsettled.
Senator, help through the chair. Please forgive me if that was the way it sounded.
No, that wasn't accusatory. I guess I'm struggling in my own mind with the issue, but. But I mean, I think it's probably demonstrable that that drinking while pregnant is harmful to the child, and so I guess I'm thinking out loud and struggling with the issue of harm. One type of harm can be reported without constitutional issues being raised, and this kind of harm can't be. So I forgive me, I'm thinking out loud. That wasn't meant as a criticism of your testimony.
Senator Elton, once again through the chair. Right now, drinking while pregnant is not illegal. So the idea of some exposure to alcohol is a broad field.
Okay.
So if we're going to document any sort of postnatal exposure, it encompasses all of that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. That makes it clear, and I understand where you're coming from. The other court's concern that I have, someone mentioned that now there is a way to move the age from 12 months to a high level. Were you here for that discussion?
Yes, I was, Senator.
Would you agree that we could do that if we choose to do so?
You're speaking of infant.
Yes, it says 12 months of age or under.
Senator, Section C, sort of referencing A in terms of the postnatal examination of a mother and infant, I think that section could be removed, but if a mother and her child were to go in to a clinic at a much later date, I don't know whether the department, we get into policy here. This is just meant to govern the way the bill was originally drafted, medical personnel attending after birth. I think that section could be removed, but whether that would be advisable or not would be a question of policy.
So you say that's a policy call?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. I guess I don't have any other questions that would come that I have for the drafter. What about the other members of the committee?
No.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Okay, here's where we are. It's possible that we might want to consider looking at another session to put maybe an additional section in there to cover those over 12 months and continue to let it stay there. Or we could decide that we do not want to go any further than the 12 months because we're trying to get it on the preventive end as early as we can and just leave it like it is. There was some other concern that someone said that they think we should add a statement of the child and not just treatment of care on line 13. Anybody have any suggestions or feel uncomfortable with the way it's written now, which would be section B?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm struggling with Jan's testimony that this bill inadvertently weakens the reporting law that we have now. So
but just based
I can be talked out of that, but that's kind of where I'm at today.
And I was thinking that maybe that might have convinced you when you heard what the drafter said and also what Dr. Brown has said. I don't see them as a conflict because I see it dealing with two different issues. And they are mandated to report on those laws there. This is a different, we're looking for this because we're trying to catch this at the early stage that we can. And I see them as, and I don't see them as a conflict. And that was a matter of her opinion, you know. I'm not saying that she's right or wrong, but it's an opinion. But I think that we should not want to back off the bill simply because there might be some conflict. If there is a conflict, it is something that needs to be fixed. We can fix it. If we can't fix it now, it will come to light as the bill is moved forward and being used. The changes could be made. Any other comment? Yes.
I had one. He's pointing.
He's pointing to you.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the distinction here is that this bill is attempting to get the mother's cooperation, I guess, to come forward and be helpful rather than somebody reporting where it will not be in the future record in case the mother goes to a different doctor the next time and it, you know, and nothing happens. That doctor is not aware. So I guess that's the distinction here. So I guess it relies a lot on how tactful the doctor is in expressing concern to the mother and suggesting that it would be helpful to document this in the child's folder and suggest that there be some type of early treatment and intervention at that point in time to have a better outcome, I guess. So.
And I think what we need to do at this time, we're not going to be able to move any further with the bill, but I do believe that we do need to get in touch with the medical board, get some information from them since this has to do with their license and any other comments that we need to get. If there's no other changes that you want to bring forward other than what I'm going to address with them, I will get in contact with them and get that information back to us at a later time. But if you want to make any additional amendments, I also would like to know that at this time. Yes,
Madam Chair, I don't have an amendment, but I am looking forward to hearing from the Department of Law. I mean, the one thing I don't want to have happen here that would be an accidental result is I don't want to create a system that would allow an insurance company access to the medical files for the purpose of whether or not to pay for treatment or pay for care. And I don't know that it is a problem, but I guess I need to hear that from the Department of Law.
And we could get that information. And there was a letter that came from Department of Law. And she spoke to the letter, the testimony that was given by Jan. And I think you have a copy in your file of the letter that was sent about their concerns. And that was not an issue that was on there.
Right. It's not. And I And I need to know whether it was not on there because they didn't, didn't know or hadn't thought about it.
So there's two things that we want to address with them.
Absolutely, because I don't want anything here to get in the way of paying for future care.
I hear you.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I would agree. Anything else that might be concerned about? We'll put this bill aside and we will pick it up at a later time on the previous bill that's been heard. There's another bill that I want to bring forward. I think that we can do it in a fairly timely manner. And so if you come forward on that, the next bill we have. I think that you can get some more, man. Mr. Obermeyer, you speak the name for the record, and you may introduce the next bill.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The next bill that we are addressing today is the committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 243. This is what we call the C version. It's an act relating to duties and powers of the Alaska Commission on Aging and the Department of Health and Social Services. You should have in your package a new fiscal note that has been attached. And also, the basic quick explanation for the CS, since it was this is really the first hearing on it, is that there was a clarification on the duties of the executive director that would take the lead role in formulating and submitting to the Department of Health and Social Services a statewide plan. The sponsor statement itself indicates this is what we call a cleanup bill. It's they're really addressing the current mission and activities of the Alaska Commission on Aging to align the state statutes. And the fiscal note itself indicates with a zero fiscal note that this bill seeks to bring into alignment the grant duties and responsibilities that were previously given to DHSS when the Commission on Aging and Division of Senior Services became a part of this department. Any fiscal impact from these changes has already been realized and assimilated into the grant process. So the bill essentially assigns authority for establishing state policy related to Older Americans Act federal programs and state programs for older Alaskans to the Department of Health and Social Services as the state unit of on aging. It transfers grant authority related to senior service grants, adult daycare, and family respite care grants from the Alaska Commission on Aging to the Department of Health and Social Services. The department has assigned these grant administrative duties to senior and disability services. The Alaska Commission on Aging is responsible for planning, advocacy, and community education activities related to the health and welfare of older Alaskans. It has relationships with state departments and agencies across the state, including the Governor's Office, Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation, and non-governmental organizations. The need for senior programs and services is increasing. Per the state plan for senior services, fiscal years 2008 through 11, Alaska already has the highest proportion of baby boomers, 32% in the nation, and its senior population is growing faster than almost any other state. By 2030, seniors 60-plus will comprise 17% of Alaska population, with a doubling of the number of those over 65. The committee substitute will help clarify state duties and responsibilities in this regard.
We do have some people signed up to testify for this bill, do we? Is there anybody in our audience that want to testify? We'll let you come forward now.
Madam Chair and Committee, for the record, my name is Joanne Gibbons, and I'm a health program manager with the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Senior and Disability Services. And Senate Bill 243, which the department supports, is in essence a bill that codifies what is currently existing in terms of the organizational structure of the commission and the department. Executive Order 108 issued by Governor Murkowski essentially moved the Alaska Commission on Aging from the Department of Administration under the Department of Health and Social Services. And subsequent, also as part of that move, the responsibilities for grants, issuing grants and monitoring grants, was moved from the commission to the department. And so this is how things have been operating since July of 2003. And so what the current law, what this proposed statute basically does is codifies a structure that's been in place and has been working well for the last 5 years, partly in response to a legislative audit that was conducted last year as part of the sunset review for the commission, which said basically the law currently doesn't reflect the current structure, and we would recommend that you so amend the law to do that, and that's what this bill does. So, thank you
very much. Any questions? Okay, we have someone else to testify.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of this committee. My name is Denise Daniello, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging. I submitted written testimony basically outlining the history of events and intent of this legislation, as Joanne Gibbons noted in her testimony. This partnership between the Commission on Aging with Senior and Disability Services and the Department of Health and Social Services has been a very good working relationship. The Commission on Aging, along with Senior and Disability Services, partnered together to assist the Department of Health and Social Services to carry out its State Unit on Aging responsibilities, which basically means to administer grants, grant funds from the Older Americans Act to community senior provider agencies to provide services for older Alaskans, to plan for senior services. This is something that the commission does through developing the state plan for senior services, which is a planning document. I think most of you have received it. It looks like this. And it's required by the U.S. Administration on Aging to present the plan for the state of how Older Americans Act funds will be used. We recently completed this plan in July 1st of 2007 in collaboration with about 20 agencies who have worked together to develop the plan. And currently, we're engaged in an implementation process, first time ever, for the State Plan for Senior Services with actually 20-plus agencies over the next 4 years. Another responsibility is advocacy for the commission. By statute, we are directed to provide recommendations to the governor, to the legislature, regarding the regulations, policies, and appropriations that benefit older Alaskans. We are also directed to provide recommendations to the Department of Health and Social Services and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority regarding provisions of funds from the Mental Health Trust Settlement Act to provide services for older Alaskans who are affected by Alzheimer's disease and related dementia, mental health illness, as well as behavioral health conditions. And we provide community education in a variety of ways through public comment that's offered at each one of our four quarterly meetings, through our rural outreach visits, and also visits with senior provider agencies during those meetings. We produce a quarterly newsletter that goes out to more than 700 individuals and agencies. We provide community education presentations to inform the public about the status of Alaska seniors and the needs of this population. And we also do a legislative teleconference, too, during session, which is done every other week, where we report on bills related to older Alaskans and encourage discussion of those bills and other ways as well. So we support this legislation. We feel that it allows us to focus on what we see as really important to improve the health and welfare of older Alaskans. And I'm available for questions.
All right, thanks for your testimony. Are there any questions? Is there anybody online to testify for this bill? Anybody else in the audience? All right, thank you very much. Did you have your hand up for a question?
I did, but I don't know how to ask it, Madam Chair. So if you'll give me a little bit of latitude. It is on this bill. On page 4, section 3, I'm assuming that under the rubric that was outlined earlier that you're, what you're doing is you're bringing the statutes into compliance with what is now happening.
Yes.
But I guess I need to understand the role of the executive director a little bit here. So the executive director will formulate and submit to the department a comprehensive statewide plan, but will no longer administer with the approval of the commissioner what those programs are, and that codifies what now that management structure that's now in place.
Senator Elton, through the chair, yes, that is correct. The department is the agency responsible for the administration of those programs and services. However, we provide recommendations regarding the administration of those services. And the state plan also provides a framework for how best to utilize those funds.
And just a follow-up question. When you say we, you mean the commission?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're quite welcome. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
We do have a bill for us that need to be accepted by us, and so if somebody would put a motion on the table for us to consider this bill.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I'd move that we adopt for the committee's consideration the CS for Senate Bill 243 version /C.
Correct.
Ask unanimous consent.
Any objections? Here, no objection. Then we have it before us. You do have the explanation that was given, and you have it also in your package as to why we have the CS and what was put into it. Are there any other concerns or questions about the bill from the committee? It is my desire to move this piece of legislation out of HES committee into finance unless there are some other issues to be addressed. Yes, Senator Elton?
Madam Chair, with a hint as direct as that, I would move committee substitute for Senate Bill 243 /C version with the attached zero fiscal note. I'd move that we move it from committee and ask unanimous consent.
It is a move and ask for unanimous consent that we do move this CS out of the committee into the finance with the attached fiscal note, which is zero. Are there anybody opposed? Hear none. There's no need to call the roll. The committee will now pass this on to finance. Thank you for your help. And we're going to get out of here about 7 minutes after 3. Thanks very much.